Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Pete Musto and Brian Lynn. Later, Steve Ember will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, Kenyans affected by dwarfism are using sports to bring attention to the condition. A group called the Short Stature Society of Kenya formed the first dwarf football team in East Africa. Its players are smaller than other adults because of a genetic or medical condition. The group aims to show the players' skills and fight unfounded claims about dwarfism. Ruth Muni is one of the founders of the team, the Lion Stars.
It was a good idea to start it because it creates awareness about us. We need people to know about us. Let us tell a story about ourselves, but not people to tell a story about us.
The Short Stature Society of Kenya has about 600 members. However, dwarfism affects an estimated 3,000 Kenyans. The Lion Stars use sports to bring people with the condition together. There are no other dwarf teams nearby. The team plays friendly games against younger, local football teams. Joseph Ocheng is the coach for one of those teams, the Macmillan Football Club.
I think if they can get a good coach and if they can be motivated, they can do very well. If they continue training well, then I think they will be a challenge to other teams outside.
In the United States, the game of European football is known as soccer. Lion Stars team captain Joseph Mena is happy with his team's progress.
From the look of the games that they have played, I can say that from day to day, my guys are improving a lot. Because out of them, if we are to complete this journey and hit our target, that is the World Dwarf Games, they have to believe in themselves.
However, Ruth Muni notes that the team does have problems to overcome.
In terms of equipment, like the soccer ball that you're using currently, it's not the normal size, it's size 4. We have one. We need more.
Kenya's Lion Stars hope to receive enough support to compete in the 2021 World Dwarf Games in Germany. In addition to the soccer team, the Short Stature Society of Kenya also has a group of badminton players. They are expected to compete next month in a world championship event in Geneva, Switzerland.
Baby spiders enjoy the company of other spiders. But adult spiders often eat each other. New research found that the adults seem to forget how to behave with each other after being alone too long. This causes the small, eight-legged creatures to become aggressive and even violent. These findings could help researchers understand why some spider species like to stay together their whole lives, but most would eat another spider if given the chance. A report on the study appeared in the scientific publication PLOS Biology. Many people are frightened of spiders, yet the creatures are an important part of many ecosystems. Violette Chiara led the study. Chiara is a student at the University of Toulouse in France. She told VOA that spiders are often misunderstood. Spiders are not just aggressive, cannibalistic monsters, Chiara said. There are spiders that are social at the beginning of their lives, and there are also some species that remain social during their whole lives. Baby spiders are known as spiderlings. They begin their lives together in groups with other spiderlings, sometimes as many as several hundred. But when spiders grow up, they usually live alone. Of the more than 40,000 known spider species, all but 30 live alone in adulthood. It is not clear why so few spider species stay social their whole lives. Many researchers believe that spiders become more aggressive as they grow, which makes them avoid each other. Chiara decided to test which comes first, aggressive behavior or self-separation. Chiara and members of her team studied labyrinth spiders, which are common in France. They observed that baby labyrinth spiders started to move away from each other 5 days after coming out of their eggs. The researchers first thought this pointed to a natural increase in aggression. However, they found that even spiderlings raised alone started to move around more after 5 days. In other words, the spiders were not fleeing from other spiders because they were worried they would get eaten. They were just stretching their legs and becoming better at moving around as they grew. If an increase in aggressive behavior does not happen naturally as the spiders age, something must cause it. To test this, the researchers raised some spiders alone and others in groups. They then brought together groups of two spiders that did not know each other to see if they reacted peacefully or violently. Spiders that were raised in groups almost never tried to eat the other spider. But those raised alone went on the attack 40% of the time. The more time the spiders had spent alone, the more likely they were to try to eat other spiders. The researchers decided that being alone causes spiders to become aggressive and not the other way around. Scientist Jonathan Pruitt is an expert on evolution, but was not involved in the research. He said that the study was a good example of revisiting what people had already believed to be true and questioning it and finding a very different story. The researchers hope to learn what happens to the loner spiders that makes them more likely to attack others. We know that they are more aggressive, but from a cognitive point of view, what is the change? Said Raphael Johnson, who helped with the research. One possibility is that when spiders spend too much time away from other spiders, they forget how to read social cues. In this case, the cues are chemicals in their skin that help them recognize each other. The researchers hope to explore this possibility by studying a species that is closely related to labyrinth spiders, but lives in groups all their lives. I'm Pete Musto.
The World Economic Forum, or WEF, recently published its list of top emerging technologies for 2019. Each year, the not-for-profit group's experts create a report listing the technologies they believe will become influential in the next 5 years. The technologies also are chosen because they could help society, economies, and are expected to gain the attention of researchers and investors. At the top of the list is a group of materials known as bioplastics. Bioplastics are made from natural substances that make them biodegradable. This makes bioplastics very different from most plastics in use today, which come from petroleum products. The widespread use of petrochemical plastics across the world is flooding landfills and causing severe damage to the world's oceans. The WEF's report notes that the use of biodegradable plastics in the future could greatly reduce this environmental harm. There has been progress in recent years in the development of new materials to replace petroleum-based plastics. One material being developed is cellulose, a very strong material found in plant cell walls. Another substance, lignin, can be used to add strength. When used together, these two materials can produce bioplastics with similar strength and long-lasting qualities to petroleum-based plastics, the WEF experts reported. The report added that these substances could easily be found without having to use resources also needed to produce food. The experts taking part in the report agreed that there is still a lot of work to be done before bioplastics can be widely used. For example, the process could cost a lot of money and require large amounts of land and water. However, the experts agreed that in the future, such emerging methods and biodegradable materials could go a long way to help fuel what they call a circular economy. A circular economy is an economic system that aims to limit waste while making the most of existing resources. Next on the WEF's list are social robots. The organization says these machines are designed to assist and engage with humans while attempting to make an emotional connection. Such robots are powered by machine learning methods and artificial intelligence. They use cameras and sensors to recognize human faces and activities. This could include a person's speech, body movements, and emotions. Over time, these social robots are supposed to be able to develop their own form of social and emotional intelligence. The robots are designed to learn about the subjects they assist, to provide information, comfort, and other forms of help. As they become more developed, these social machines could take over some of the responsibilities currently met by human workers. The WEF reported that worldwide sales of robots designed to help people reached an estimated $5.6 billion in 2018. But the WEF predicts the market will expand to $19 billion by the end of 2025, with more than 65 million robots sold each year. Also making the WEF's 2019 list of emerging technologies at number 3 was a growing group of very small lenses. For many years, it has not been possible to produce extremely tiny lenses. But the WEF report says engineers recently discovered methods to create smaller, lighter versions known as meta-lenses. The experts believe these lenses could permit the shrinking of microscopes and other widely used laboratory tools. They could also be used to improve the performance of cameras, virtual reality equipment, and industrial sensors. You can see the full emerging technologies list at WEF's website. I'm Brian Lynn.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember.
For 4 years now, to realize our vision, we have pursued a simple but profound strategy. Opportunity for all. Responsibility from all. A strong, united American community.
Americans elected Clinton as their 42nd president in 1992 and re-elected him 4 years later. In the summer of 1996, President Clinton's first term was coming to an end. He had established a mixed record of successes and failures in his dealings with Congress. He had greater difficulty in those dealings after opposition Republicans won control of Congress in 1994. All presidents face political battles, but in President Clinton's case, there was more to it. He and his wife, Hillary Rodham Clinton, were being investigated over their personal financial dealings in Arkansas during the 1980s. There were also accusations of womanizing from his years as governor of that state. But in the summer of 96, President Clinton's public approval ratings stayed above 50% and went as high as 60%. The economy had improved during his first term. Americans were getting jobs and spending more money. More people, and not just the wealthy, were investing in the stock market. In August of 1996, the Democratic Party met in Chicago and nominated President Clinton and Vice President Al Gore for a second term.
My fellow Democrats and my fellow Americans, thank you for your nomination. I don't know if I can find a fancy way to say this, but I accept.
The Republican Party held its nominating convention that summer in San Diego, California. The party chose former Kansas Senator Bob Dole as its presidential candidate. He had resigned from the United States Senate to seek the nomination. He chose former Congressman and Cabinet Secretary Jack Kemp of New York as his vice presidential running mate. Dole was a World War II hero who suffered a permanent injury to his right arm. He later served 4 terms in the House of Representatives. He was elected to the Senate in 1968 and re-elected 4 times. Another candidate in the presidential race was businessman Ross Perot. He won the nomination of the Reform Party, which he started a year earlier. He had also run for president in 1992 and received 19% of the popular vote. During the 96 campaign, President Clinton pointed to the stronger economy. He also campaigned on his legislative record, including new gun control measures and a higher minimum wage for the lowest paid workers. Bob Dole, in his campaign, accused President Clinton of spending too much. Clinton's answer was that he had stopped Congress from cutting too much from programs like health insurance for retirees. Bill Clinton and Al Gore easily won the election, defeating Bob Dole and Jack Kent. Ross Perot received just 8% of the popular vote this time. Clinton became the first Democrat to win a second term since Franklin Roosevelt in 1936. William Jefferson Clinton began his second term as President of the United States on January 20, 1997. His inaugural speech would be the last by an American president in the 20th century.
Let us lift our eyes toward the challenges that await us in the next century. It is our great good fortune that time and chance have put us not only at the edge of a new century and a new millennium, but on the edge of a bright new prospect in human affairs, a moment that will define our course and our character for decades to come. We must keep our old democracy forever young.
Clinton discussed some of the issues that the country continued to face, including racial divisions.
The divide of race has been America's constant curse. And each new wave of immigrants gives new targets to old prejudices. Prejudice and contempt cloaked in the pretense of religious or political convictions are no different.
During his first term, President Clinton appointed a large number of women and minorities to the government. As he began his second term, he chose the first woman to serve as Secretary of State. Madeleine Albright had represented the United States in the United Nations during Clinton's first term. And he appointed the first Asian American to serve in the cabinet. Norman Mineta became Secretary of Commerce. The Republican Party kept control of both houses of Congress in the 1996 elections. At the end of his first term, Clinton had gotten into a budget fight with the Republicans, which resulted in two government shutdowns. Those shutdowns did more political harm to the Republicans than to the president. In 1997, they reached a compromise. They agreed to a plan to end the federal deficit by 2002. In fact, the budget was balanced much sooner. In 1998, the economy was so strong that the government found itself with an extra $70 billion, the first surplus since 1969. President Clinton visited China in 1998. He spoke of his belief that in the 21st century, democracy will be the right course practically as well as morally, yielding more stability and more progress. A month later, in August of 1998, Al-Qaeda terrorists bombed the American embassies in Kenya and Tanzania. The attacks killed more than 200 people. President Clinton ordered missile strikes against al-Qaeda targets in Sudan and in Afghanistan in an effort to kill the group's leader, Osama bin Laden. Later in the year, President Clinton ordered military action in response to Iraq's refusal to cooperate with United Nations inspectors. The inspectors were searching for nuclear, chemical, or biological weapons. Clinton ordered missile strikes against targets that UN officials said could have been linked to such weapons of mass destruction.
Their mission is to attack Iraq's nuclear, chemical, and biological weapons programs and its military capacity to threaten its neighbors. Their purpose is to protect the national interest of the United States and indeed the interests of people throughout the Middle East and around the world. Saddam Hussein must not be allowed to threaten his neighbors or the world with nuclear arms, poison gas, or biological weapons.
In 1999, Clinton deployed American aircraft and missiles as part of a NATO campaign in Yugoslavia. NATO was trying to stop attacks against ethnic Albanians in Kosovo. Yugoslav military leaders agreed to withdraw their troops. NATO stopped the bombing and sent an international peacekeeping force to Kosovo. The United States provided 7,000 troops for that force. Earlier in Clinton's presidency, the United States had led NATO airstrikes against Serb targets in the former Yugoslav Republic of Bosnia. The operations followed the killing of 8,000 Muslim men and boys by Bosnian Serb forces in Srebrenica, a UN-declared safe area. Clinton later pushed for the 1995 peace agreement to end the Bosnian War. The Dayton Peace Accords were named after Dayton, Ohio, the location of the Air Force base where they were negotiated. 3 years later, in 1998, Israeli and Palestinian leaders signed a Memorandum of Understanding at the White House. It called for Israeli forces to withdraw from some areas of the West Bank. The Y Memorandum resulted from 9 days of negotiations at the Y River Plantation in Maryland. Secretary of State Madeleine Albright and Special Diplomat Dennis Ross traveled repeatedly to the Middle East to work on the peace efforts. In 2001, President Clinton tried to get Palestinian leader Yasser Arafat and Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Barak to sign a peace agreement. Clinton invited the two leaders to the United States and held many hours of talks with them. Reports said they came close to an agreement, but the negotiations ended without success. Palestinians declared a new uprising against Israel. On trade issues, President Clinton, at the end of his second term, got Congress to approve permanent normal trade relations with China. That meant no more need for presidents to have to ask Congress for temporary renewals of those trade rights. Clinton argued that the move would create a better environment for democratic reforms in China, as well as creating jobs in the United States. Among other foreign policy matters during his presidency, Clinton normalized relations with Vietnam, and he supported the expansion of NATO, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, in Europe. Bill Clinton's presidency will be remembered, at least in part, for his efforts to reach out to the international community. But it will also be remembered for the impeachment trial in Congress that almost ended that presidency.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.